Hi, everybody. This is your co-host, Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you today?
I'm doing awesome.
That's good to hear. So as we're recording this, today's Father's Day, and I did get a call from my son, which was a treat because we only see him, like maybe once a quarter or something like that. So we send texts to him, but every once in a while we'll get a call on an occasion. So, and again, not trying to drag it out, but tomorrow's my birthday as well. So it was a combined Father's Day birthday call. But even so, I still enjoyed it very much. So
by the time everybody hears this, it'll be happy belated birthday, but send the happy belated birthdays in to Stu.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm beginning my 61st trip around the sun. So I've completed 60.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've told you before, I mean, I feel better at 60 than I did at 40. So, but I'm not going to soapbox about, health or anything like that. I feel better. So that's it. So anyway, if you are watching this on any video platform whatsoever, and there is a subscribe button down below, please consider subscribing if you're not already. If you are, thank you very much. And click the like button. Most of them are a thumbs up like that. We have three Facebook groups. The links will be down in the description down below. We also have our email address, paranormalist@theparanormalistpodcast.com. That's also the direct link down below, because I know that's a long thing to try to type in, so you can just click on it. It'll be okay. So that's all the announcement part. And I'm anticipating what we're going to do this time, because the last time you alluded that you had some things queued up, ready to go. So is this one of the queued up ones, or is this another interjection like you put in the last time for Mrs. Stu?
Yes. No, this is an interjection. And I have to tell you, like, I have like 12 half-finished episodes, because I start going down a rabbit hole and then I go hopping off to another rabbit hole and then hopping off to another one. But this one in particular is dedicated to my middle boy, Michael, who is really in love with crypto stuff. And he has been listening to the podcast and giving me critiques. And one of his critiques was more monsters and more scary stuff. So I'm going to try to do both this time.
Well, I don't know many cuddly monsters. I mean, that doesn't really fit the term monster. I mean, we normally think of monster as a less than desirable being. Yeah.
I wish I could take you all and sit you down in our living room one time, and you could hear a Saturday night conversation, because as all my boys story tell. And so it's like a round robin of these great stories all evening long for 3 or 4 hours, and laughter and what have you. So storytelling is a family trait. Okay. And I have been given orders, so I am going to fulfill this to the best of my ability.
All right, then. I'm anticipating it. Yeah.
So we are going to talk today about Hexenwolf, or more commonly today known as the Duwago. Okay? So I was looking at dogmen type stuff, and I came across this thing called the Hexenwolf. And I started to do a little reading on it, and I think it's the same creature going down the road. We just changed the name of it over the course of time. So in the 1700s, the Pennsylvania Germans, which we know today as the Pennsylvania Dutch, Dutch is a misnomer. It was actually Deutsch, and we just misspelled it and mispronounced it, and that's how it got that way. But anyhow, they moved into like all the central states. So they moved into Pennsylvania, they moved into Maryland and Virginia. There was a huge influx of these German immigrants. And they had a lot of werewolf stories in their culture. But what I found interesting is that as I was reading through this, I did not know this, but the decorative five-pointed barn stars that you see on all the like old-fashioned Amish buildings and stuff, they're supposed to bring good luck. But there's also another reason that they put them up. They claim that it's a talisman against baleful spirits or dark entities entering their home or their attaching to their livestock or what have you. And so this was definitely something that happened. There were some very old stories, but they're bits and piece type stories. So I wanted to come up to the first modern one, and we're going to start with the modern stories. In 1944, in West Middleton, Frederick County, Maryland, is where we find the word Dwayo used for the very first time. And the sighting was of a gentleman who actually ended up talking to the local press. And he claimed that he had heard a noise in his backyard. His pseudonym was John Becker. In the article, they don't tell his real name because he didn't want razzed. So John Becker lives not too far from Gambrill State Park. And he has a home there out in the country, kind of parked up against the park. So there's a lot of wilderness. And he's outside one evening just hanging out. And he hears these horrible screams and yips. And he's like, what the heck is that? I had never heard anything like it. And then he hears crashing in the bushes. And he sees what he described as a bipedal dog running. First on all fours, it paused for a second, stood up, and kept on going. It was moving toward him in the dark. He said it was as big as a bear. It had long black hair and a bushy tail. It growled like a dog or a wolf as it got closer. Of course, the thing scared the crap out of him because halfway there toward him, it stood up on its hind legs and started running. So he definitely knew it wasn't just a feral dog or anything, or you know, anything like that. He grabbed a piece of firewood that was nearby and started beating at it until he could get it to let go of him, at which point he broke and ran for the house and managed to get into the house. His wife heard the screaming, the foot and stuff, and she's standing in the doorway screaming, run, run. And he gets to the house. She slams the door. The beast kind of stands there like looking like what it's trying to decide if, you know, do I go after it to the house? Do I go after him or go to the woods? And it took off into the woods. He describes to the police, they call the police. I mean, he's roughed up, he's scratched up, and they call the police, and the police come out and take a report of the incident. And as crazy as it sounds, that's where we get the quotes from about it being on its hind legs as it began to attack him. And the police kind of let it sit there. Well, the reporter goes over the police blotter, comes up with this stuff, finds out who the guy is, and goes and talks to him and writes an article about it. But again, providing protection to him for his identity. Because like I said, nobody wants to be that person who gets chewed up because they are telling a story about seeing a wild creature. So after that, it stops. There's no more stories for quite a while. A few incidents, possible sightings, people calling the police going, there's a huge dog chasing around the edge of my property. Some possible Bigfoot accounts that could have been that, but we're going to fast forward to 1966. Still in the Gambrill State Park area, on the other side of the park, there's a gentleman who is referred to in the news report as Jim A. And he encountered Ed Dwayo as he was heading toward his campsite. So he had rented a campsite for a week, was headed in that direction. And according to him, he saw a large, shaggy, two-legged creature about the size of a large deer with a triangle shaped face, kind of like a German Shepherd, and ears and chin. It was brown in color, and it made a horrible scream as it backed away from him. He was offloading his stuff into his campsite when this thing came out of the woods, startled as though it was afraid, it was shocked to see him, and made these loud sounds and turned around and ran. He describes it as having an odd walk as it ran. He said its legs stuck out on the side of the trunk of the body, making its movements appear almost spider-like. So that rotating spider-like walk. And he reported it to the police. He was that shaken. So we have another police report there. Then in the fall of 1976, a Dwayo was seen in Frederick County near Thurmont, near the Cunningham Falls State Park. And I actually know where these places are. They're only about 2 hours from my home. There were two men driving up Route 77 on a private road so that they could spot deer. So city folks don't know what spotting deer are, but in the country, and maybe not as popular today as it used to be, but we used to do a lot of deer spotting. What you did is you took this great big spotlight out, you drove really slow, and usually the girl would do the hold the light out the window, and they would go looking to see how many deer they could see. It doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but a lot of first dates were deer spotting dates when I was a kid growing up. So they were out spotting deer, and that's what it is. And they were just kind of looking to see how many deer they could see. That tells you kind of how hunting season is going to be. If you see only a few deer, it's going to be a rough hunting season. You're probably not going to find, your chances are less. If there's a lot of deer, better luck come hunting season. And that matters in the woods. So to their surprise, as they're spotlighting, they see a great big animal come out across the road in front of their car. Now, they're driving slow. When you're spotlighting, you're only doing about 20, 25 miles an hour, if that.
I was going to say, if that. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I mean, you might only be doing 10 miles an hour because you're going slow because you're going to count those deer as you're going. Oh, look, there's a great herd. And it's a lot of fun to see the deer. It just is, if for no other reason.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah. So, you've spotlighted.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, this thing comes out in front of their headlights. They slam on the brakes and they describe it. They got a really good look at it because it's dead on in the middle of their headlights. It was at least 6 foot tall, kind of inclined forward. Its head was large and wolf-like. It was covered in a brown or brindled. Brindle is kind of brown with gold flecks in it. Skin or hair. But the lower half was more striped and had darker and lighter banding, so it was basically variegated running back and forth through the bottom half. They described the arms or forearms or forelegs as slimmer and that they were held up in front of it, and the back legs were very heavily muscled and similar in shape to a kangaroo, but not hopping, it was on its feet. So they make a point of saying this was not a hominid, this was not an ape, anything like that, that they're very well aware that it was nothing like that. It was much more similar to a wolf, they said, or a huge dog, but it was upright and appeared to be adapted to moving in that style. So it was walking or running upright. They said they were impressed by the size and the strength of those legs. And it had this huge, like I said, huge canine head. In 1978, two park rangers near Cunningham Falls would encounter a large, hairy creature running on two legs, very similar to what these people have reported. So, this is fascinating. Now, we're going to go forward to 2009. So, this is not old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is very contemporary. A dear friend of mine, his name is Pastor Robin Swope. They used to call him the Paranormal Pastor, because he collected a lot of paranormal information, anecdotes, and what have you. He tells a story about a young woman named Corey Brown driving on Corey Brown Road near Myersville in Maryland, same general area. So she's driving along, headed to visit somebody, and she's passing through the Gainesboro State Park. Now, that might sound weird to city people, but we have lots of little towns that you drive through state parks to get to. All of Route 30 runs through Buchanan State Park and all of that. So there's huge swaths of Route 30 that you're literally driving through a state park. You just don't realize it unless you're watching the signs go by.
Right.
So she's driving along through this area and she said that, there's nothing but trees as far as you can see. She's at the edge of Gainesboro State Park and the forest is pretty thick. Now, this is when she sees the road she's got to turn off on. It's called Haw Bottom Road. And she turns down that road looking for her friend's house. And that's whenever she suddenly gets this terrible feeling. Her hackles go up. You know that feeling that there's something wrong, but you don't know what it is?
All too well, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was what it was. The hair rose up on the back of her neck. She started looking around thinking, there's something watching me. She's wanting to go faster, but knowing on this road that she doesn't know very well, and it's an old back twisty turny country road, she could be in more trouble if she tried to drive fast, because you could very easily veer off the road on these old back roads and end up in a ditch or smacking into a tree and be at the mercy of whatever it is you think is out there. So she's trying to stay calm. She's trying to breathe. She's trying to focus so she doesn't end up, you know, in an accident. But she is beginning to shake. She is that convinced there's something watching her, and it's pacing her. Like, it, she didn't drive through it. It's still there somewhere. She's going down this road at about 20 miles an hour. And it, whatever it is, she feels like it's still with her. So she continues to drive, and she's looking around everywhere. And in the periphery vision, she sees through the trees a shadow flickering as it goes by, running like parallel to her, but on the other side of that little stand of trees. And she can see it. It's the middle of the afternoon. It's not nighttime. She can see it. And it's a brown smear of color. And that's exactly how she described it. It's a brown smear of color. And that's all she could see at first. It was bobbing through the underbrush, moving very fast, keeping pace with her car. And she estimated she was going 20, 25 miles an hour at that point. She starts to slow down, trying to get a better look at this thing to see what it is. And her car slows down to a crawl. She sees this blurry mass, and as it bounds out of the trees close to the road at that point, and she describes it as a massive leap of hazy color that suddenly became a huge dog-like animal on two legs emerging from the forest. The fangs are what were burned into her memory, huge fangs from a mouth that grimaced in hate and anger. She said the fangs could have ripped her to pieces. As she, it stood there, it was panting, looking directly at her, drool dripping off of it, because it's run hard. So she's sitting in the car, literally stopped now, staring at this thing out the passenger side, and it's glaring and growling at her. She can see its muzzle pulling back as it snarls. Drool is running off of its chin as it's panting, trying to catch its breath. And she said that's whenever the really scary part happens. She looks at its eyes, and they're all black, no white at all. She said, it was as if I was looking at death and hell ahead, and it was a dizzying madness. I needed to look away. It leapt out with its arms outstretched, its claws grasping at the wind, and she hit the gas at that moment and shot forward away from it, and she didn't look back. She was terrified. She just kept driving. She found her friend's place. She pulls into their driveway. She is shaking. She is crying. She's got the car doors locked, and she starts hitting the horn. She's looking around. She's hitting the horn, and they come out, and they're like, what's wrong? And she's like, get a gun. Get a gun. And he got this friend of hers, is a male friend. He gets a gun. He grabs, comes out, and he's like, what is wrong? She's still unable to talk, just, you know, crying. They get her into the house, and she tells the story of what she had seen. He didn't believe her. I mean, he just didn't. He said he'd lived in those woods for most of his life. He had never seen anything like it. He thought maybe it was a feral dog that tried to jump up on the car, and she imagined the rest. But she was convinced she saw it. So after that, she went to the local library in town and began doing some research and saw sketches and that were artist renditions of what people's eyewitness accounts of the Duwayo were. And it was exactly what she had seen. So she's still convinced to this day this is what she saw. Heck of a scary, you know, thing to think about. I can imagine, because I live in the rural area, I'm sure you can too, driving along down an old back road looking for someplace and something crazy coming out of the woods after you. There's nothing. I mean, what do? There's nothing around. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, not even cell service.
Yeah, I would think that as time goes on and more people have dash cams, mm-hmm. even rear-facing cameras, cameras around their homes, you know, it's only a matter of time before there really is conclusive proof of these things. But then, you know, I can see the naysayers looking at a piece of evidence like that saying, like, well, anything can be manipulated these days. So, and that's true, you know, pretty much. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, there's some interesting videos that I've seen, but that's the thing in the back of your head, because AI is out there and they're so good at computer generating things and faking things that today that it makes it really hard to believe anything. And 50 years ago, if you had video footage of something, you know, it was really hard to fake it, but it's not anymore. So I want to talk about one more Dwayo in that area. So this was in 1963, and I didn't put it in chronological order because this story is fascinating and it didn't show up for a long, long time. So basically, it's a story about a young man who was at his grandma's house in Frederick County, Maryland in 1963. And he kept the story secret for a long time because he was really concerned that nobody would believe him. So the setup for this story is that every summer he would go out and spend a good part of the summer at his grandma's house, which he loved doing, except grandma didn't have indoor plumbing. And yes, there are still places in rural counties in Pennsylvania and Maryland today where there's no indoor plumbing. I know of some. But so that meant that you had to go to an outhouse, and the outhouse was like, was a great distance away from the house for obvious reasons. They smell really bad and you don't want it to be near your water supply and, you know, those things. So in the daytime, it was a pleasant walk. You would walk out through the backyard, down past the flower beds, past the garden, past the little barn and the couple little buildings that housed like tools and stuff, and then to the outhouse at the edge of the woods. At night, it was a totally different story. She did have electricity, but only inside the house. So you either had to wake up grandma, he was about 11 or 12, and tell her you had to pee, which is kind of humiliating for a 12-year-old boy. I'm afraid to go outside, grandma. What are you afraid of? You've been here before. You know, that kind of thing. So on this particular night, he wakes up. He's got to go pee. It's like 11, 12 o'clock at night. And he's, you know, goes to get the flashlight. The flashlight's not where it's supposed to be. So now he's got this conundrum. Am I going to wake up grandma? Or, you know, go out there by myself in the dark? Well, there was a little bit of moon out, so he decided to opt for let's go out by ourselves in the dark. And he could see the pathway in the garden, kind of helped in the flower beds and stuff. You had to, as long as you were walking between those things, you knew you had the right path. Right. So he gets down there, he gets past the little barn, he gets past the little outbuildings, comes to the edge of the woods, uses the outhouse, and turns around to come back. And that's whenever it gets interesting. So as he's walking back, he gets that hackles up at the back of your neck feeling. And he notices that there's no sound. Now, anybody who's ever lived in the country knows that it's very loud at night in the summer. You've got the crickets and the tree frogs and the night birds. And it's just a massive sound. It's so loud at night that it can wake you up. And suddenly it was complete silence. Everything stopped making its noise. So he turned around. He's right at the gardens, which is toward the edge of the bottom edge of the yard, not too far from the outhouses. And he's kind of walking quickly now, you know, and then he gets that feeling that something's watching. So he turns around. We've all done this. And that's whenever he has a sighting that he's never forgotten. He said he saw this animal stepping out of the woods into the backyard of the property from behind the outhouse he had just been in. It was moving past the outhouse toward him. And it kind of maybe 10, 15 feet past the outhouse. And so it was coming out into the more open area away from the shadows of the trees. He said it was dog-like. He said he had a German Shepherd, and he said it had a head very similar with the snout and he said, I stopped dead in my tracks. First of all, he couldn't make sense out of what he was saying. It was standing on two legs, walking in his direction. And he said, it looked right at me. Its eyes were yellow and they glowed. Not the eye shine. This has been made perfectly clear in multiple stories I've read. You know how if you shine a light on an animal's eyes, it'll glow
right.
reflectively. This was glowing from inside the eyes outward, not just eye shine from a light. And he didn't have a light, frankly, so that wouldn't have been an issue anyway. And he said, it turned its head, it looked right at me. I felt chills go up my spine. I thought, I'm going to die. And then it started to move again. It moved past the garden into the little gravel lane and turned around, looked at him again, and turned back and went into the thicket of the trees. At that moment, as he heard the rustling of it going into the brush in the trees, he turned and he just belted hell for leather back toward his grandma's house. Gets into the house, you know, he's crying, he's scared, he doesn't know what to do. He wakes her up, he tells her, I saw it, I saw it, I saw it, I saw it. And she calms him down and she says, You didn't see anything, honey. You just misunderstood. The family starts making fun of him, you know, because he saw a werewolf and all of this. And as a little boy, you don't like that. I mean, you try to avoid that stuff. It's rough enough for an adult, let alone a kid whose mom and dad are laughing at him. Tell them about your werewolf, honey, at the family reunion and that kind of thing. So he lets it die for years. After he's an adult, he stumbles across there are sites all over the place that where you can report cryptid information. And he writes a detailed report and he puts it up. And that's why it doesn't show up until many years later. But it was so detailed. And he is adamant that he saw what he saw.
The fact that the wildlife, the insects, everything just stopped making noise. As humans, I mean, our very presence scares a lot of animals.
Right.
Okay, so we are part of nature. We're part of this planet, this ecosystem. And so, you know, like you said, the crickets, the tree frogs, everything else like that are not going to be bothered by a human. But for the sound to be turned off, to me, that indicates something not normally part of the ecosystem. Something supernatural.
And I have to tell you, you'll hear those kinds of stories as well when you get into Bigfoot stuff, gargoyle stuff. Like you'll hear suddenly the entire forest went silent. And I looked up and there was this thing looking back at me. Even to the point where I told a story years ago in one of my books about, it was a Bigfoot story, but about four Bigfoot that killed a deer and left it tore it in half and it left the front half hanging in a tree and took the back half and all the innards with them. There's no question. I mean, I have the photographs of the deer and the people that where this happened at, they actually took wooden boxes and sat over top of the footprints so that they wouldn't be damaged until they could get somebody out there. And Pennsylvania Bigfoot Network went out. And over the course of the summer, they watched that half of the corpse of the deer that was still in the tree to see if anything would come back for it. And they noticed that even the insects wouldn't touch it. Like maggots didn't get laid into it. And the normal process of anything in nature, there's a really wonderful piece of footage from one of the Bigfoot shows from years ago where they take a dead carcass of a deer and they stake it out and they do a time lapse on it. And in like 72 hours, everything's pretty much eaten it. And it's, you know, within 2 weeks, it's nothing but bleached bone. This thing literally was 3 months and it withered and dried out from the sun and the heat, but no animals touched it. None of the little predators, no possums, no raccoons, no anything. Even the bugs didn't go near it. So I've come across that before. So we're going to go on back to another one. There's no a way of doing Dogmen. I think Dogmen, DeWayo, and later on we're going to talk about another creature. I think they may all be either related or the same thing, just different names. Mm-hmm. So this is a Dogmen story. Michigan has become very popular and with Dogmen stories. There are, have been legends of Dogmen stories forever. Hunters report seeing them, you know, all the time. Hikers see them all the time. There are many, many such stories. So I'm going to tell just a couple of the, of those because there's so many of them. And I just thought that you really couldn't talk on the subject without doing it. So this is a person who wrote into one of these sites, and they were talking about they were out in the wilderness in Michigan. They were just kind of walking around, having a good time on an established trail in an area that has been set up for hikers. And this lady and her family, they are hearing something crashing through the woods, kind of going parallel to them. So they stop. Their first thing is, oh my gosh, I wonder if that's a bear. If it's a bear, we need to turn around and get the heck out of Dodge, because nobody wants to encounter a bear in the wilderness. And that little bottle of bear spray, I've had this a moment, does not look up to the task when you're standing there looking at like a 400-pound black bear. And you're like, oh, pardon my French, but oh shit, I thought this was a good idea. I might just make it mad. So I'm just going to very carefully, slowly walk backwards, hope that it stays going the way it's going, and we're all going to make it home, okay? So she's out there, like I said, with her family. They're kind of hiking, and all of a sudden, they hear this crunching along the side of them. But it's very dense forest. They catch just little glimpses of something moving, their thoughts a bear. Whatever it is gets a little bit ahead of them and steps out in the trail in front of them. And they said, we saw it for just a couple seconds and then it was gone. They turn around and they leave. They're still not convinced of what they saw, what it was, but they know it was something huge and it was in the woods and it was on its hind feet. They were not, so that people know, bear do not normally walk any distance on their hind feet. All the videos and the movies and stuff like that always have them up rearing. But if they're going to chase you, they're going down on all fours. That's when they're fast. Mm-hmm. Right. And so as they're going out, they notice that there's an area they had passed on the way in, and it's all torn up. There's footprints. They look like a wolf's, but they're like two times the size of a normal wolf. And as they look up, they see this like bark hanging down up above their head. So we're looking at approximately 6 foot, 6-7 foot in that range. There are claw marks and shredded bark hanging off of the tree as though something has stopped there to sharpen its claws. And that's what left the prints, you know, there in conjunction with where the marks are on the tree. It's fascinating. So they just ended up estimated that the highest one was about 8 foot off, and then it was from 8 to 6 foot that it was tearing on this tree, and they left. And they don't know what they saw, but whatever it was huge. It was sharpening its claws, and it sort of fit the bill. So I'm going to tell you a couple more. So there's a gentleman who lived in the area, had lived in that area of Michigan for quite a while. He said one night he woke up from his sleep. He heard a noise outside his window. He lived in a one-floor house. And he kept, you know, kind of like, what is that? Something was bumping along the edge of the house, bumping the siding. So he gets up and he sits up and he's like, what am I hearing? And he looks at the window, and about whatever this thing is, it's looking directly at him. He describes it as it looks like a dog. It's about 7 foot tall, literally looking in his window. And he said, but the thing that caught his eyes, his attention were his eyes. They were pitch black. This is his words, pitch black, soulless, and predatory. Whatever was outside of my window was watching me as I slept, which creepy just to think about it. And he didn't know what to do, so he he finally, as it began to move a little bit, he got up, he shut the curtains, and went back and sat on the bed. In the morning, he's, you know, it's all day, almost daylight. He's still sitting there. He's terrified to go to sleep because it could come through the window. He said he began to hear what sounded like a dog panting, that and then it got quieter. And he finally got up his courage as dawn hit, and he peeked out the curtain, side of the curtain, and whatever it was had gone away, but it had left distinct footprints under the window. And they looked like a wolf. Though, and like I said, there are just so many of them. But here's one from Texas. This is from McAllen, Texas. There was a group of young adults. They were traveling through the area, and they claimed that they saw a black Great Dane by the side of the road running at an abnormally high speed. So they're driving along. There was two or three cars. They were all headed in the same place. They don't tell you where, but it could be any place. They were going somewhere on a trip together. And they noticed this black Great Dane running really fast down the side of the road. The dog veers out in front of them. It's ahead of them, and it veers out in front of them, stops in the middle of the road. The cars come to a standstill because they don't want to hit it. And the dog calmly, this is their words, calmly got up onto 2 feet, walked across the road, back down on all four, looked behind itself at them, and then took off running into the woods. And three groups of people in their cars saw it. They made a report.
Yeah, what I'm finding interesting is these stories, the creatures not being that aggressive. I mean, it sounds like it's being curious, especially like the young man going to the outhouse. It was more curious than anything, and that differs a bit from our the episode you did on dog men, who seem to be extraordinarily aggressive toward humans. So I do see a difference there.
Yeah, there's a difference in how they look. It's a difference in their attitude. Yeah, it's just crazy. We're going to visit another story here. This is actually by two park rangers. So they're out in the park, and they're looking for dead animals. They're driving along looking for dead animals because people don't realize it, but you know, animals get hit and killed. And in order for them not to have these horrible rotting carcasses whenever the tourists come through, they have guys that drive around at night and pick these things up and dispose of them. So this was, unfortunately for him, his shift. And ahead of them, they saw what they thought was a bear laying along the edge of the road. So they pull over and they're like, oh, crap. You know, this is going to be a heavy one. So they pull up in front of it. They have a winch and stuff to load anything really heavy. And they're getting the stuff out when they realize that whatever this thing was, it had a human legs, hands, and feet, although it was completely covered in hair. They described it as having the body of a UFC wrestler, but the face wasn't human. When they rolled it over, it had dog-like ears, fangs, and a long protruding dog snout. They called other rangers to the scene immediately. None of them knew what to do with this thing. They had two other guys come from headquarters. They filed a report. They hauled the carcass away. Were getting ready to haul the carcass away. They went back to get it, rather. And by the time they got back there, it was gone. There were patches of hair and blood along the edge of the road, but it was completely gone. They said that early the next morning, they were surprised when government cars pulled in. They took hair samples and debriefed them, quote unquote. And they said that somebody had run over a bear, and that's what they were told by the government agents. Somebody just ran over a bear, and you do just need to shut your mouth and not talk about it. And the guy said, well, I waited till I was retired, and now I'm not under their auspices anymore, and I can talk about it. So he decided to tell his story.
It amazes me he's still alive.
I mean, they just paint these people as crazy. But you know, how many times do people have to see this stuff before we say, okay, there might be something to it? And throughout history, there are reports of dog-headed men. St. Patrick, as, you know, Ireland's St. Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at artist renderings of him, he's drawn with a dog's head. I don't know if you know that or not. There was an entire group of people that were dog-headed, dog-faced men and women who lived in that area. And he was converted to Christianity, to Catholicism. And he is portrayed in the oldest artwork as a dog-headed man.
Like Anubis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, before we leave the dog-headed people, I have to tell you there's a story from the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah. This has been reported. This was reported probably 15, 20 years ago. There was a group of scientists, and if you're into this stuff, you've probably seen some of their videos and what have you. They went there. They wired all of Skinwalker Ranch because it was insanely active. There were reports of an extinct, ancient, prehistoric wolf that smelled of rotting flesh, that was shot multiple times by the owner of the property, and the dog would wince a little bit, like jerk from the motion, but it didn't seem to phase it at all, and it never killed it. And at one point, he actually shot it enough times in one event by itself that he shot a chunk of flesh off of it. And when he went to get it, because he thought, okay, this is tangible, this is something that people can do DNA on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He went to pick it up. It was rotted. And he literally shot it, saw the stuff. When it ran away, he went over and picked it up a few minutes later, and it was stinking and rotted. But here's the most interesting story. This has been told by two different groups of people. There were a group of Native American rangers who, from the local Native American tribe, they were police officers from that tribe, who have had this encounter, and there have been three other men who have also had this encounter. So altogether, we're talking five different people have reported it. So the story goes that there were a group of men walking ahead of some scientists on one night, and on another night, it was the two rangers from the local Native American reservation. And they see these three guys walking ahead of them. It's dark out, but, you know, the moon's out, so you can clearly see three people moving ahead of you. And the men have their backs to them, and they walk up toward them. The men are stopped. They're still got their backs to them, standing along the edge of the path. They're in suits, and they're smoking. You can see the cigarette, you know, lit, and the smoke, and you can smell it. And these three men have their backs to them. And when the men walk up, they go to say something to these three men in that little group. And the three men turn, and the sighters panic, and they just back up. They said they were not a group of humans. They were dog-faced men standing there smoking cigarettes. They had the heads of dogs, and they looked like Doberman pinschers. They were terrifying. And they people who saw it ran out of the area and refused to go back. And that's been reported multiple times in the same area by different people over. And what I find interesting is before any of this stuff came out, there was like a 10-year window where these guys weren't talking to anybody. It was a secret. They were just doing the data, documenting. It wasn't known. And they were still getting those reports. Nowadays, you could say, yes, it was social contamination from the media, but not at that time frame. And I'm going to end with this story, I think. Well, actually, I would like to end with this one, I think. This is probably the best one I found. And this one is for you, Michael. So there was this gentleman who was out in the woods. He was traveling along. And when he came across this creature, he described it as a human wolf hybrid. It had long, shaggy fur. The fur had to be 2 feet long, hanging off of it. It was massive. It had these yellow eyes. He said, but it looked like a dog. His head was a dog's head. And he said its eyes glowed from inside. Second time, he makes a point of this, even though you know, nighttime, he has a flashlight on it. He's like, it wasn't eye shine. It was the eyes glowing. He said the dog smelled, the dog man smelled of decaying flesh and wet dog fur. And he said we were only a few feet from our truck. So we jumped, you know, ran and got into the truck real quick. And it began to pace back and forth around the truck, pacing back and forth around the truck, as though it was trying to figure out how to get in. And it couldn't figure out how to get in. So he just sort of sat there waiting for it. He honked his horn. He did anything he could think of to kind of annoy it. It just sort of stood there watching him, trying to figure out what was going on. And then it left. But I do have one more I'd like to tell. This one took place in, I had one last one I got in me. I got this one hit Michael will like as well. So it was 2017. It's August. It's West Virginia again.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, there's a region and you can sit down on a map and you can see clusters, and the little bit of Pennsylvania, a little bit of Maryland and West Virginia, there's like a cluster that of these sightings that are just insane. So anyhow, it's like I said, it's August 27th, it's 2017, it's about 7:30 at night. This guy's telling the story, says, you know, he's a adult man about 20 years old at the time. He's driving home to his family's home, and he had lived in West Virginia for quite a while. He had grown up elsewhere, but they had moved there when he was a teenager, so he was fairly familiar with the roads. He's driving down the highway, and he's kind of going slow because, again, if you've ever driven in West Virginia, it is nothing but mountains and curves, the entirety of West Virginia. So you can't make any time on those.
Even the interstate.
Yeah. That's just all there is. So he's going slow because he knows this road. He knows that it's going to make this really sharp crook, and there's a little church right there at the edge of the road. If you're not careful, you could hit it. And then the road turns the opposite direction and bounces you into a lot of trees on the other side. And it just twists and turns, just a series of S's. So he's going along, and he said there's this ledge of fallen trees on the other side from the church. So you have to be really careful to slow down there because you're going to take something out otherwise. And that's where he sees this thing. He said, I'm driving slowly around the corner. I see this thing. It's on the ground at the edge of the road. It's on all fours. When I saw it, I thought it was a black bear, about 400 or 500 pounds. It was huge, broad shoulders. And he said, they have them in the area. He's seen them before. It made perfect sense. So he slows down really super slow because you don't want to hit a 500-pound black bear. It's going to eat your car. You know, that's it. You're going to be sitting there waiting for somebody to come pick you up. And as he slows down to a stop, he said, he realizes it's not a bear. It's a wolf. It has that long, bushy tail. It has the long, you know, wolf snout. The hair, the fur is black, and it's looking at him. And he said the eyes were amber colored. And he said, by now I'm completely stopped, and this wolf turns and it looks directly at me. And I realize there's something really off. Like, this thing is 2 to 3 times the size of a real wolf. And it's staring at me as though it's smart, as though it knows that I'm a human. And he's like, I'm running in my head through all the possibilities. Could this be some sort of a wolf species we don't know about that the government's released in the area? People should know that in cities that the government does this to country people all the time. They bring species back or dump a species into an area and then repopulate it. Coyotes are the bane of our existence for a while. Other places they repopulated with wolves, which sounds really lovely, except for the fact that now you have to watch for coyotes and wolves eating your chickens and chasing your children. So it's not as much fun as it sounds like. But that was the first thing he thought, is the government must have dumped a pack of wolves in the area or something. And he said, but that was before I saw the eyes. They looked more intelligent than anything I'd ever seen. I knew it knew what I was. I knew it knew that it could kill me. And I suddenly realized I was not the apex predator in this situation. This thing could eat me. And he said, I'll never forget what happened. My car is completely stopped. We're staring at each other, this thing and I. And suddenly I hear cracking, like bones popping. This thing comes towards me. And it puts its hand, and he uses the word hand, on the hood of his car and raises itself up off the ground onto 2 feet. And he said, I'm deliberately using the word hand. They were human hands on the arms of a giant wolf. And in the headlights, I could see it clearly. It was 8 foot tall. It had to be more like 600 pounds, covered in that fur. And it was matted. You could see the matting and the fur all knotted up in the lights, those amber eyes staring at me, that long tail just hanging there, and a human torso. From the waist up, it was muscular and broad-shouldered, more like a human being than an animal. He said the hands looked like raccoon hands, like they had the three fingers and claws, black claws at the end of them. And he said it moved on its hind legs around the car. I could hear its toes clicking. I could hear its claws clacking on my car as it's moving around to the driver's side. And it reached out. It had this long muzzle, big fangs. He said it reminded him of like what you would see in a video, artist's rendition of a wolf, an ancient prehistoric wolf with those big saber-tooth kind of fangs. And he said, I'm looking at the eyes. That I couldn't stop looking at the eyes. I was mesmerized. And this thing's holding my attention and I'm watching. And he's like, I couldn't move. I couldn't start the car. I couldn't like hit the gas. I couldn't do anything. And it starts trying to open the car door. Its hands aren't made for that, but it had the idea. This is how you get in there. And it's clattering and jiggling the door handle, trying to get it. And at that point, he said, I realized this thing could tear the door off the hinges if it wanted to. If it could get just that little bit of purchase, it would be able to come in and eat me. And he said, I don't know if it was God or not, but I started to pray, dear God, watch over me tonight, watch over me. And he said, in that moment, the beast reared back, almost like he hit it. It looked at him with such hatred. It snarled, came back around to the front of the car, dropped to its hind legs and looked back at him, and then took off running into the woods. At that moment, he hit the gas. He took off out of there. He said he told his family. He said, I felt like I'd been in a trance. I couldn't move. He gets to his parents' home, pulls into the garage. The garage door automatically comes down. He's crying. He goes into the house. He's hysterical. He's telling his parents, oh, my God, you should have seen what I seen. You should have seen it. And he said they kind of laughed at him and said, you're overwrought. You are imagining things. And he said, I wasn't. In fact, I was so afraid that for about 6 to 8 weeks, I refused to leave the house by myself. I wouldn't go anywhere. I was afraid I would find it again, or it would find me. Eventually, he would eventually start going back out again. But he said, these things are in the shadows. They're watching us with intelligent eyes. They're waiting for us to prove their existence in our world, but they know we are here.
I think the significant thing in that was that the moment he tried to pray and prayed to God, that made the difference. I can't believe that you aren't thinking the same thing I am.
Oh, of course I am.
That's a demon, you know, a demon in a form that's going to scare somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I immediately, I was like, 'cause he makes a big point of the fact that he didn't know what else to do. So in his head, he just began praying. And it stopped and backed up. I agree. Whatever these things are, they have an evil nature. I think that they are there to cause fear. They're there to cause confusion. They're there to sow dissension. They're there to isolate people. Because every one of these stories you hear, you come up with the same thing. My family laughed at me. My family said I was imagining things. My family said, you know, I kept this to myself since 1963, you know, this one guy. There is a component to this. These things are coming from elsewhere and they don't come for any good. And it makes me ask, I have to say, it makes me ask a couple other questions. Are these some of the things that are happening to the people that are missing in the woods? They're missing in the cities. You know, I have come across a couple urban stories where dogmen and Bigfoots are now going into cities, raiding garbage cans, dumpsters. It's a food source. Appearing to people, homeless people, I think they appear to a lot of people. I just think many of the well-to-do people have too much to lose to say anything. So they go home, they work it out emotionally, however they do. Maybe slam back a couple and decide this is something that didn't happen to me tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. If that's happened to you, folks, you can send us an email and we won't laugh at you.
Nope. Actually, you know, that is something that as the ghost lady of PA, the paranormalist, whatever, I have heard over 27 years now or more of this. So many of the stories start out for me with somebody reaching out to me and saying, "You're not going to believe me, but..." Because I'm the only person they know might take a chance and believe them. Or at least not laugh them out of the ballpark, you know?
Or the Sieges. Yeah, they could.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. That's they come to us in the paranormal community because we're it. You know, the Sieges, the Bigfoot people. And the websites have made it a little less lonely because you can reach out to somebody from a Bigfoot network or a cryptid network or something like that and say, "Hey, I don't know who to tell," but, and those are only the ones that are brave enough to do that. A lot of people just leave it go. So I hope these were interesting. This last one scared me, actually. I have to tell you, my little hackles came up as I'm visualizing this, as I'm doing all the research on it. I'm like, dude, this is an amazing story.
Yeah, not the kind of encounters that I would like to have, and to let people know, because, you know, before I click the record button, I mean, you and I have a discussion, and I'm sitting here at the desk where I do my work in my house. Now, I've had experiences in this house, and before I actually had, and in fact, I looked down, there's nothing there, but I had a cat rubbing against my leg, like this, you know, rubbing the head against my leg. That I don't mind. But if I were to see something like this trying to rub its head against my leg, you know, one of those dog kind of things, yeah, I think I might pray too. Yeah. I think I may also need a bathroom at the same time. But yeah, I think I'm gonna pray as well.
Yeah, it was interesting to see the Dweo, the Dogman, werewolves, traditional werewolves, the Lugaroo, and Skinwalkers all have a lot in common.
Yeah, and again, my mind's going to every one of them's a demon.
Yep, that's what I believe. I honestly think these they impact physically, but demons can. They interact in our world in all sorts of ways. They can physically do that. One of the episodes I've been working on, I know I tell you guys, and then I don't show the episode up for like 6 months, but one of the episodes I've been working on is about angels. I have learned so much. I thought I knew a lot. But it seems like I had a lot to learn yet. So I have learned that there are more than seven types of angels. There are at least 11. Hmm. Angels are only one variety. There's 10 others that I didn't know what they. I mean, I knew a couple of them, like the Seraphim and that sort of thing. But going back to their physical descriptions and the tasks they were given by God. Oh gosh, guys, wait till you see this episode. It is fascinating. There are angels that are tasked with protecting the earth, And I think that if there's angels tasked with protecting the earth, then there's demons tasked with destroying it. Yeah. And there's so much more to tell you guys. I can't wait to share it all with you. I'm like 80% done with this episode, which was supposed to be today's episode until my son challenged me. And Michael, you better like that last story.
And he trumped everything else, right? So
he did. Well, he got my head going in that direction.
Well, I also did see the post you made this morning on the Paranormalist Group share about the angel.
Yeah. Yep. I did that story. And if you go to my WordPress account, My Supernatural Life, I just did a story about a supernatural event in a church that I witnessed as a kid growing up. Is it back there? Or is it the real living one?
Little Miss Cassie.
Oh,
she was looking. Normally she hops right up on me, but she didn't today. So, well, I mean, she was looking around like there was something here. So, and our other cat, Ginger, I kind of know that there's something around because she'll be playing and all of a sudden she'll just stop and stare at something that only she can see. And she's on the floor and she's doing this.
Yeah.
So something taller than her that she can see that I can't see at that time. So
my granddaughters, particularly when they were about 2 or 3, I live in a house that I honestly feel nothing bad in most of the time. Or I don't ever feel anything bad in, but I never feel anything in at all unless I'm specifically talking to like a friend of mine who passed away. And like, I'll kind of smell his cigarette smoke and I'm like, okay, so you're here, Steve. Dude, you know, everything's good. We love you, but you need to go be with your family.
And you've told that story for us before, right, too. Yeah.
But my granddaughters will every so often panic, but looking from the living room into the dining room, they'll go, Grammy, do you see the man? And I don't see or feel anything. And I'm like, what man? And they're like, the man. And I'm like, no. And I'm thinking, maybe it's Steve, because he loves kids. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, this man's mean. Steve's not mean. But my one granddaughter, she will say to me, and she did not hear, like, she was like 1.5 years the first time she said it. So it wasn't like something that was discussed in front of her. Steve's been dead for, I don't know, 8 years now. And one night she's sitting there and she's laughing. And I said to her, what are you laughing at, sweetie? And she said, the man with the funny whiskers. And I said, the man with the whiskers. And she's very articulate, this kid. She's been that way from the very beginning. And she said, yeah. And I said, really? And I said, does he have a name? And she starts to giggle and she goes, he says his name is Steve. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, this one's okay.
Yeah. And I'm sure we could go on and on like this.
Yes.
Ad nauseum. But we would probably lose a few listeners at the, or viewers at the time. So I think you tried to say, and with that, my friend,
and with that, my friends, we're done tonight. We can cut it where we want to. But
all right.
But anyhow, I love those are really cool stories. Like, once Michael got me in that mode, I had to go find them. And that last story just creeped the bejeebers out of me.
Yeah, understandable. Yeah. So I think with that, I'll say goodnight to you.
And goodnight to you too, Stu.